Welcome to the inaugural edition of the Falcon and Winter Soldier podcast, or recap podcast, with the guys that you've heard from the weekly Daily Fantasy Football podcast. So we're definitely pivoting here, Joe. But it is Keith Fleming and my man Joe Matz. Joe, what's going on?
Not much. Back to work as a substitute teacher for the lot. I've done 2 weeks now for the first time in a year. So,
is it making money again? Is it crazy though? I mean, like, what is school like right now?
It's pretty normal. The last week, I came back for a week, had a spring break, and then now I'm back again. But the last quarter, they were still doing. Half the kids would show up on Mondays and Wednesdays. Half would be Tuesdays, Thursdays. And then the rest of the time, you're online. Now it's back to normal, except everyone has a mask on. So now it's pretty normal.
It's still got to be wild to see a school filled with kids wearing masks. Just having grown up, like, you know what I mean? You would have never...
It is a little weird. There was one middle school, too, where they had the masks. And then at their desks, they had, you know,
the shields.
Plastic shield. And at that school, they told me that at lunches, they had to sit in alphabetical order. So that way, if anyone caught it, it would be very easy for them...
The contact tracing.
...to know... Yeah, which has to kind of suck because you can't sit next to your friends unless you're lucky and they're, you know, have almost the same last name.
It is one of those deals too, though. If like the hot girl, you know, his last name is near you, you're going, okay, this is going to work out good for me. You know what I mean?
Just to bring it back to the MCU, it's making me think of how in Spider-Man Far From Home, you've got like his romantic rival now is a kid who is 5 years younger than him
right.
with the flip. So it's just kind of the bizarre things that happen in real life. Like
I did like
never
that
know.
Choice. So this podcast, and for those that have not, this is the second show on Disney Plus. Me and RC did a podcast on WandaVision, where we would at the end of each episode do kind of a whose line was it, where we'd read the lines and kind of just discuss them. With Falcon and Winter Soldier, we're going to do questions. And before starting, I just want to, again, the WandaVision one is up. If you've watched the show, I think it'd be interesting. We were a little off. We got a little carried away. Well, actually, I should say I got carried away.
Not just you, though. Across the internet.
Oh, no, for sure. But, I mean, RC was a little bit more measured. And that didn't turn out true. But I think a lot of our analysis was spot on. And I thought it was a really good show. I'm very excited about Falcon Winter Soldier. I don't know about you. We'll do kind of a brief summary in just a second. Did you like the first and second episode? Because I love the second one. The first one was it was okay. I almost wish the second episode would have been first. And I think they could have, you know, changed up the Cap part and, you know, kind of introduced him at the end of the second episode, which would have been the first, and then done, you know, the same stuff in the second. I really like the fact that you already had Bucky and Falcon on a mission. You know what I mean? It seemed like what the show, I think, is going to be.
Yeah, the first episode, it's definitely a little slow. And then obviously your mileage is going to vary. How much do you care about Bucky getting over his demons? How much do you care about Sam's non-superhero life? I think it did a good job of kind of like slowly building up the themes that now I think through two episodes, some of it's become clear. I think there's a lot of stuff about legacy, which we'll get into later. But I think it built the groundwork that was needed. You know, I don't think, I'm not going to be like, oh, that was an A+ first episode, but I think it was solid and it was what you needed to build in to now the more action heavy elements.
And we're going to skip the recap. Everybody here if you're listening to a podcast like this, you've seen the two episodes. We're just going to get into the questions and we're going to talk about it that way. Like, there's no point in going.
Go watch this show
exactly.
If you haven't. Like, why are you listening to this?
So question number one for me, and I know this is not really about the plot. We may not even find it out, but it was the first thing I thought of when the episode was over is, are we going to find out how Cap got the shield back that he gave to Sam at the end of Endgame? Because that is not Cap's shield. We know that Thanos just destroyed the one in the battle in Endgame. And B, it does look different. Like, it just, I can't even really describe it. It's something in the middle with the silver. I should have done one more look at it so that way I could maybe figure out exactly what it is. But the shields are different. And I'm just fascinated to hear, like, what does this mean?
Yeah, it's kind of funny in retrospect where they could have just had him carrying the shield when he goes back in time. Like, they, and we would have all just been like, oh, they built a new one. And then instead, it's like he leaves with no shield and comes back with one, which I kind of think we just have to, like, give a lot of leeway to Steve going back, because technically I think that should have created an alternate timeline anyway where he wouldn't have shown up there in the first place. So I think we just kind of give Steve a break that, like, he gets to spend his life with Peggy and then he gets to have his shield back somehow.
Because, like, you can also assume that, like, with the Tesseract, right? I mean, they lost it in Endgame and yet still were able to go back in time and get it, you know, earlier. So I guess it does make sense that Steve could just go back in time and do the same thing, where just at any point in that time, he just basically takes the shield. My thing is, though, that we know that from the rules of what they were saying in Endgame, that would change history and, you know, it changes everything. But I kind of do hope we get to that. And I know that's not the probably pressing question for most people, but it was the first thing I thought of. All right, question number two. One of the, like, three very interesting, like, subplots that they're going to discuss in the show and I'm excited about is seeing Sam, you know, go to visit his sister. It's his family's business. And it's hurting and it's struggling, and to hear he can't get a loan, and it immediately brought up the great thing of, you know, somebody asking him, well, you're an Avenger, and, you know, I'm sure that you're well taken care of. And he goes, no, that's not true. You know, we kind of work off of goodwill. And I mean, right. These people literally just saved the world. So does it make Tony and Pepper, the U.S. government, I mean, pretty much everybody, assholes for not making sure that the Avengers are at least somewhat financially stable? I mean, Tony, to me, more than anybody, because he's like a billionaire.
Right. Like, he seems like he's the richest person alive in the MCU.
He always talks about how he pays for everything, right? So.
Right, that actually got me curious, too, now. Now I'm wondering, like, the Avengers facility, is that entirely funded by him? Is it a joint venture with the government? Like, we don't really, he said, as far as I know, have answers to any of this.
We do have for the facility. Tony did pay for it.
Okay. He's right. So that's interesting that, like, all the more so now that, like, they wanted to have control over the Avengers if the government isn't even funding them.
Exactly.
Although, at the same time, I guess if Tony's the one writing the checks, maybe everyone should have listened and signed. But that's a whole other thing. It is a little weird that Tony wouldn't, or Pepper, because Pepper actually is the one who more likely would think this through and be like, we have to take care of other people. So it's a little weird that that didn't happen, especially, like, when you consider how little money it would be to her and the Stark Industries to, like, give Sam $50,000 to run their... What is their
They want a loan for their business, basically. They can't. It's a restaurant that's on the water, I believe.
Okay, so they're like, are they shrimping? Like,
no, I mean, it's a boat. Or? That I think you actually get on, and then they serve the food, I believe, you know, while they're on the boat. Is there a chance that maybe this is, because we know race is going to be an issue, and kind of, you know, Sam thinking about, does he want to carry the shield for a country that looks at, you know, people of color a lot of times not as equals? And it's kind of, it could be another, you know, point to that, because if you think about it, Bucky, you know, is technically a fugitive. I know he was brainwashed, but he's done awful stuff. Well, he broke the, you know, the Sokovia Accord. And,
well, he didn't actually break the Accord.
Oh, that's true.
That was Zemo.
But he was already a criminal. But he's just, well, let's put it this way. He's done terrible
he's
stuff.
He's murdered a lot of people.
He's murdered a lot of people and people, and they're getting him therapy. He seems to be getting taken care of. And then you look at Sam, and I mean, he's literally having to be a contractor doing this extremely dangerous work. I think of, you know, the soldiers that do the same in the Middle East and, you know, handle these, like, I mean, they get paid well, but it's very dangerous. And it's just the difference between a, you know, a Black American and a white American is sort of, you know, can be treated.
Right. And I think that's the true answer to this, you know, money conundrum here is that, like, yeah, in reality, if the MCU was real, I would assume Pepper and or Tony would have taken care of everybody. But if you're making this show, you're able to dive deeper into, like, the loan scene, where that plays into the themes of race in this country, where anyone who doesn't know about, like, redlining and banks, how they treat Black people, go read it. Ta-Nehisi Coates has a great article. I think that was the one that kind of really launched reparations again as a discussion point. But
they turned down a superhero. I mean, they turned down a superhero for a $50,000 loan.
The other thing I liked about that, beyond, I don't know, again, I think it does play really well into the race thing, but I also like the idea that, like, people who were in the blip can't get loans. That, like, you have no control over that, which I guess also draws parallel to race, where it's something you have no control over, yep. And people are just like, "Ah, oh, it's too bad. We can't do it because of this."
Sorry. The next question. This show almost seems like it's about intellectual property or IP, because obviously Sam gives back the shield because he doesn't know, I think, for sure if he can live up to it. And I don't know if he, you know, feels like the country deserves him to do something like that, you know, because, again, it's a symbol. And this is a country that has a really bad past in a lot of ways. You would understand his hesitation. Mm-hmm. So then the government obviously takes that shield and immediately, like, it's ours. And just rebrand it and, mm-hmm. and puts it back out there. And it's just, it's almost funny with, you think about, like, the comics and how right now we're just now starting to get the mutants and other things into the Marvel tent because of, again, you know, they've had their IP broken up. And I just thought that was a little point like that. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I think it does bring up a lot of questions about ownership, where obviously Sam felt, just on a very base level, that it's Steve's shield. It's, Steve was Captain America, and to some degree in his mind, there won't be another one. It's Steve. And even Bucky, like, the reason he wants Sam to have it, obviously, there's more to it in the therapy scene, but because Steve gave it to him specifically. Whereas the government clearly views it as Captain America is whoever we say it is. We own Captain America. We own the shield. It's not Steve Rogers' property or whoever he passes on to. It's us. So, I think you can draw parallels to that in, like, you know, whatever company control, obviously Marvel controls their own stuff, but, like, the, you know, how they control everything. It's theirs.
Did Sam make the right call? I mean, that's to me some of the most interesting stuff is when Bucky and Sam get into the argument and the group therapy. I honestly was waiting for Bucky to say Steve should have picked me, but I like the direction that they went even better, where it's, you know, if Steve was wrong about you, that could mean he was wrong about me. And, you know, obviously Steve was the only person that, you know, believed in Buck and was the only one that got, I guess, gets to call him Buck, you know, as Falcon learns in this episode. But again, you can understand where it's two people with completely different backgrounds, different colors, and looking at this situation totally different.
Yeah. Did he make the right choice? It seems like the answer is probably going to be no. They've already given it to another guy. Obviously, it's a white guy, which is a big deal. But a guy who we're obviously not sure is a good guy. So that's an even bigger deal within that world. So I'm guessing, I assume that this series is kind of about the journey of Sam accepting that he is the rightful heir as Captain America. But I can totally understand why he makes that choice. For one, Charles Holmes made this point on the Ringerverse, which is their podcast that's going all in on the MCU now, where he said, you know, black men who become a symbol in this country tend not to do very well. They'll last very long. So just on that level, I'd say it makes sense. And then the other thing is, I think that first episode is largely about what he feels like he's supposed to do, like, legacy-wise. He feels like he's not the right guy to carry on Steve's legacy. That, like, no one is.
Did they not do such a great job of portraying that, too, in that scene with him giving that speech with literally, you know, Steve standing over him, the uniform with the shield to his left? I mean, it was a really powerful scene.
All of it. And then the other thing, then what does he do? He goes home, and now he's trying to carry on his family's legacy. Because to him, like, that's what he's supposed to do in his mind. Like, you carry on your family's legacy, not Steve's.
Well, and what's crazy is that's unsuccessful, and that leads to, obviously, there being a new Captain America, and John Walker. I thought he was really good in both episodes. I thought they've done a good job, because the question I want to ask you, and I know you said you were having a tough time with this too, are they portraying him as a good guy or a bad guy?
Like, if I had to guess, it feels like he probably ultimately ends up being a bad guy at this point. But I have a lot of doubt in that, because I think that intro was very effective, where we see he at least seems legitimately humbled in those early scenes. And even when we don't, obviously he can pretend to be like that in the camera, but in that locker room, when he's just talking to, I don't know if it's his wife or ex-girlfriend, or whoever, it is his wife. All right, so he's talking to her, and then he's talking to his best friend. And I think it's a very, I don't know how much, I know he exists in the comics. I don't know how much of that is transferred verbatim, but it's very interesting that his wife and his best friend are both black. Like, I thought that was a very conscious choice. And I don't even know how to fully unpack that. Certainly not at this point. But I think that was a very interesting choice. And then, he seemed legitimate. And then he, obviously, the stay out of my way at the end of episode 2, it's obviously ominous. But
in
up until
defense,
that point,
they had turned him down like three times. And he tried to save them, you know, the first, or like get in and told them they need to work together. So, I mean, I could understand his frustration. I don't think that's that bad. That, you know, you mentioned, too, the one thing that concerns you was when they did the test. Or they said, what did they say? He tested off the charts or very high.
99th percentile in, everything. And well, that seems sketchy in this world.
That's
so you're 99th percentile
that,
in everything.
You know, maybe mutant power. And then the other thing is obviously the gun, which I thought that, you know, is a bigger deal for the comics, but just the fact that, I mean, Captain America's carrying a gun.
That's true. That's a good point.
The other thing with, you know, John is just, in the comics, I don't know if you're aware of this, he's not received well. He's sort of a bad guy in the beginning. And being Captain America, he actually becomes a good guy because of, you know, everything that they're trying, you know, Sam basically talked about what, you know, Captain America was.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting because it seems like they're sort of teetering on that here. And the guy that's playing him is very good. And I just, I'm very interested about that. While we're on Cap, do you think the real Cap is going to be on the show before it ends? Whether it be a flashback, whether it be just he's going to show up on screen.
I think he's done. I would be kind of upset if he showed up. Like, I think I never want to see Steve Rogers again in the MCU. I think you end it with him finally having the dance. That's it. The end. Anything after that?
They did hit home runs.
Why? What's the point?
His and Tony's arcs. I mean, you could say the other characters, but Tony and Cap, like, I mean, both of them are just walk-offs.
Yeah. 100%. So I don't see why you would bring him back. And I guess you could have him like show up at the very, I assume if he would show up, it'd be in the finale. I wouldn't be totally shocked, but I'd be surprised because, yeah, I just think that ending's too perfect.
So the other thing we learn about this that kind of deals with Captain America is, you know, after they realize the super serum is out there, you know, Bucky is like, I got to show you something. And they go to Baltimore of all places. They're walking down, you know, this neighborhood that looks like it's not in the best area of town. And they go up, knock on the door, and ask for Isaiah Bradley. We find out that he was, against his will, I guess, volunteered to himself, given the super serum by the Americans back in the 1950s, and sent to basically take on Bucky. He rips Bucky's metal arm, or I guess he said he almost ripped his metal arm off.
Part of it.
Which me and Joe were talking about before we recorded this. I thought they should have shown the flashback and of him at least, you know, trying to do that, especially with Bucky's already had several flashbacks to, you know, his time. That just, to me, would have made so much more of an impact. But I think we're going to see more of Isaiah, right? With the storyline that they're putting in place and then to introduce a black Captain America that nobody knows about, like not Cap, not, you know, I mean, you saw how angry Sam was to be like, yeah, how does nobody know about this guy? Like, and why is he not being taken care of and just, you know, out here basically hiding from the world?
Yeah, I think that he has to show up again. I think you have to give that character some amount of agency. You can't just use him as a brief prop in this story because that would just kind of go against the whole idea to me. So I think he has to show up again. What exactly that role would be, I don't know, but I could see this like at some point. Again, I'm assuming Sam will become Captain America at the end. I would assume he's going to shine a light on this in some way.
And he's got to have something to do with the super soldier, which, I mean, that's another one of my questions from this episode is where is it coming from? Like, because there's, right, you know, there's several options here. Where do you think right now it's coming from?
I'm trying to remember who the Flag Smashers when they're like escaping in episode 2, not from our heroes, but from whoever is hunting them down. I think they have a name, right, for whoever's hunting them down. I'm kind, yes, of blanking on
it's actually an organization basically for the post blip world.
Yeah. I kind of think there's something in there where someone is created. Of course, they also have it. So, but I kind of think there's going to be, I know, I think this is one of the other questions, is the Flag Smashers, are they,
yeah,
bad?
Yeah, let's get into that.
I think there's obviously another shoe to drop. I thought, you know, the key exchange was kind of how John Walker, the new Captain America, is just kind of like, we got to go get these guys and take them down. And yeah, well, and they're talking about why the Flag Smashers exist and stuff. And Sam says something about, like, because they talk about resources, and Sam's like, you know, says a guy who's never had to struggle for resources.
Right.
So I do, and then the way they're portrayed in that second episode when they're not fighting against Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Heroes.
Yeah, that one guy's like, you guys like Robin Hood, I think he specifically even says.
So they had food for them, beds, the pain from losing one of their members, you know, to be left behind, to be sacrificed, like, you know, so they can get away at the airport. I'm with you. Like, to me, they've portrayed them not as the villains, which is, to me, even more interesting because there's a good chance the villain is going to be, you know, the cliffhanger from episode 2 where they're going to meet.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be more ambiguous by the way that they're leading into this. So I'm assuming there's a big bad that's outside of them, or maybe is manipulating them, the Flag Smashers. So I'm assuming whoever is the big bad, I think, is the one who's using this serum for whatever purpose they ultimately have. I think they're the ones who have it. And potentially gave it to the new Captain America, potentially gave it to the Flag Smashers for whatever evil reason that they have.
So that would, and that would really get into now thinking of, you know, the new Cap kind of being evil, because John definitely did not portray any super soldier powers in the battle, you know, on the two trucks. And it was kind of interesting. I thought in real time, man, he took that, you know, fall off of a truck pretty well for a,
yeah,
you know, a non kind of, you know, what are the three things? Extraterrestrial. What does he say? Wizard.
Wizards. Oh, what is the third one? I'm blank. I loved that whole exchange, though.
That was wonderful.
Fantastic.
Look that up, because I that was seriously probably my favorite thing on there. You know, we were talking about, again, before the podcast started, I loved how they're paying attention to both the blip and Bucky, like, being in therapy, because these heroes have gone through some stuff. And I really am glad that they're, you know, letting Bucky be in therapy on the show, because I know it's kind of corny, but it really does send a message to people correctly that, you know, if you're in pain or you have issue or you, you know, dealt with trauma, it is important to get your mental health, you know, straightened out. And there's nothing wrong with asking for help or going to see a professional, even if it's mandated.
Therapy might have prevented all of WandaVision, so.
Amen.
I mean, so yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, the therapy's a little too on the nose for me sometimes, but obviously this is not really a show about therapy, so they rushed it a little. But yeah, I agree. It's good for people to see this, that that's how this guy's trying to deal with it. And I think he's engaging with it, even if he's a little jaded, clearly, in those scenes. But it was aliens, androids, and wizards. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, we and forgot Ultron. Got to give androids.
Now super serum is what they added to it after that. I just also, the Bucky scene while we're on Bucky, when he jumps out of the plane, was just, I thought that was great. Because, I mean, that was always the coolest thing Cap did. Like, it really was. I remember the first time he just, like, jumped out of a plane, you know, with no parachute, no nothing. It's like, this dude can't fly. He can't, you know, he's just like, I'll see you on the ground. And, you know, I think Bucky found out quickly that was not so easy to do.
No, definitely not. We can, again, it's hard to live up to Steve Rogers, because that guy was a badass. But yeah, that's one of the things I'm also super digging about this show is clearly, and it makes sense, the MCU movie, it's most related to in a multitude of things, the characters, at least some thematic stuff, and then I think visually it's very much Winter Soldier, and I think that's the best MCU film. So
that's the best trilogy for sure, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, the only movies that I think you could potentially take over the Cap lens are the Avengers movies, and that doesn't even really count. Because that's everybody.
Right.
So, yeah. That's one of the reasons I've been excited about this one the entire time.
I mean, one of Cap's movies is an Avenger movie. That shows how...
Really, it is.
Well, I mean, that's what, you know, Civil War is. On the blip, because, you know, I'm glad that they're keeping with this. There's a couple of reasons. One is, obviously, it's helpful that last year we didn't get any new stuff, right? That was unexpected. So, Endgame is a lot fresher to Marvel movie fans than you think, because, I mean, we've literally had one movie come out since then. So, yeah. I mean, there is not much time to process. Even there's been a lot of physical time. There hasn't been a lot of movie time to kind of go through this. And just to, again, to remember, half the people disappeared and then 5 years later came back, which I have a friend that argues all the time, probably things were better after a while, once the original blip happened. Like, I'm sure that, you know, don't get me wrong, the trauma and stuff, but by bringing everybody back, he's like, it had to create more problems. It had to, because how many people that they come back and their wife's remarried, or, you know, somebody is living in their house, or, you know, obviously they don't have a job. And I mean, it's insane to think about, and I'm glad that they're dealing with it.
Yeah, I honestly, it didn't even occur to me that they would make that big a deal of it when it happened. And then, yeah, every single thing we've seen since then, you had Far From Home, where it was more played for laughs, but it was a real thing. And then WandaVision. And
they showed you the craziness, even in a comedic way, of what happened. Of literally just people reappearing where they were when they left.
The middle of a basketball game.
Right.
And then, Monica in WandaVision, she was Blip. She comes back. Her mom is dead.
One of the best scenes, I thought, in the series. It was really powerful.
And then, now we're seeing two characters who got Blipped are the main characters in this show. Which, again, I think this is another one of the reasons why you just kind of have to wave away some of the logic. It's a little weird that Steve abandons his two best friends who were gone for 5 years, one of whom was brainwashed for like 60 years. So again, you just kind of have to wave some of that stuff away.
You but do. Yeah, I will say devil's advocate though, because I've heard that before, that remember that Tony, I think, and Cap had a special relationship. You know, obviously they fought, but the one thing Tony tells him, you know, when he comes back, is to try to get some of that family thing. You know, that's basically the last thing Tony says to him before he dies. So it doesn't really surprise me that Cap, who's been longing for that long, does like, you know, fuck it, I'm going back.
Yeah.
And getting the girl. I think what's, and we'll end here, the best part about this show so far is how well you have Bucky and Sam playing that relationship that everybody knows, where there's two dudes that they're close, but they're close by association and a third party. And they both have a best friend that they care so much about. But you take away, you know, that best friend that connects the two, and it's like oil and vinegar. And it's so great to see it, because literally everybody knows this relationship.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think they are one of the more underrated parts about Civil War too, is that like you see the camaraderie around Steve when he kisses Sharon the two of them are just beaming in the car. But then they like, what, who is it? Sam's in the front. He like won't move his seat up.
Yep.
And then when they fight Spider-Man, and then finally Sam uses the drone to like smash Spider-Man out of the window. And Bucky's like, couldn't you have done that earlier? And Sam's like, I hate you. So, like, yeah, I think it's a really fun relationship. It's kind of that classic, you know, like, really 80s, early 90s kind of, like, mismatched guys going at it, too, which I think is always just super enjoyable. And, yeah, I think it is a kind of an interesting thing. We are all either have been one of those people, or we've observed those people where everything's fine as long as that other friend is there, but as soon as he's gone, It's oil
amazing
and water.
How, like, in most groups of friends too, there's always that one person that really does kind of hold almost sometimes the whole group together. I completely agree with you though, that just they've been two of the more interesting characters too. For, we talked about the best part about moving to TV on the WandaVision, or at least I did, is the time. And like, you know, me and you both love television, and that's the reason is I shifted probably in the mid 2000s to where TV shows were basically my movies. That I just think the higher quality stuff is mostly on TV, and it's because it gets sussed out so much more. You know, it's kind of like when you read a book, you know what, you know, every character's thinking and their dialogue, and it just, I think it's been better. And this is a good opportunity for Marvel to tell a really good story. And I like where they're going with this. And if they do it correctly at the end, I think it's going to be a pretty cool full circle deal to have, you know, Cap and Bucky, you know, you fast forward in the future, Cap actually gives the shield to Sam, who obviously he didn't know as long as Bucky. And then, you know, Bucky kind of becomes Sam's, you know, Sam. And it just, you know, it goes around, and they're going to need each other because Bucky definitely needs somebody. I mean, it's like what he said. He's 100 years old, you know. He just left in the middle of a date. Like, Bucky is still going through stuff, which, again, something we haven't talked about. I thought the scene where, you know, you find out that he's still remembering, you know, these people that he's killed. Because I think it was Tony, right, that asked him. And he said he remembers all of them. You know, he asked, do you even remember? And he goes, I remember all of them. And it's one thing to hear that. It's very powerful to see it and see the way it's affected him. I mean, this guy is living in an apartment with a TV on the floor with a pillow and a blanket. And that's pretty much it. And that's all you've seen from his home life. So he is not well adjusted yet. And right, he does need a friend.
And I think, yeah, without Steve, I think it's pretty clear, like, the one person he's spending time with is the father of an innocent person he killed. Like, grief is really, guilt more so, is what has taken over his life. And also, we heard early in the first episode that Sam's been texting him. And granted, I think, again, Sam's probably doing that more out of devotion to Steve than, like, I really care about this guy a lot of my own. But yeah, and he can't even be bothered to, like, answer any of those texts, because I think he's just kind of fully in a self-loathing mode. And again, that's why he's so angry at Sam too, is because he's like, if Steve's wrong about you, then he's wrong about me. And I think that's all he's had to grasp onto, is that, like, Steve still believed in him. That was kind of the thing that kept him together.
And it was interesting too, though, that, you know, he said all this and he acts like he doesn't need it, but, you know, he shows up with Sam and he was awfully quick to jump on that plane. You know what I mean? And he's been awfully quick to stick by his side. So it's a great pairing. That's something Marvel has really nailed, is some of these, you know, pairings that are, at first seem odd, and the next thing you know, they're very memorable. But is there anything else from the first episode that you want to, or first two episodes, excuse me, that you want to discuss or mention?
I feel like we've covered most of it. I'm just really interested to see where a lot of this goes. Where, I mean, I think, you know, the racial dynamic is super interesting. I think, yeah, I loved your point about how, again, we forgive white guys who do terrible things. And, you know, Sam hasn't even done anything wrong, and he's getting fucked by the system.
Yep.
Which is very true to life. So, and obviously I'm very glad that they have a black showrunner to help guide that. So yeah, I'm really curious to see where that goes. I like being in something where I don't really know where it leads. Like, even WandaVision, it was like, oh, we don't know. But it was like, but I feel like Wanda just kind of broke mentally and created all this. And then that's exactly what happened. So I'm excited to, not know where this is going exactly. And I'm going to alter my guess a little. I'm going to say that a new Captain America is ultimately a good guy, but also kind of being manipulated. I'm saying all the people we think are bad right now are being manipulated by the actual bad guy, and they're actually good. That's my guess now.
I don't care what anybody's guess or take is on the show right now, as long as you're not saying that it's going to lead to mutants showing up in Marvel, because after everybody talked about Wanda, and then, like I said, I knew it when they said the line about, you know, the new Cap basically scoring off the chart. I saw several people being, this may be the introduction of mutants. And I'm like, no, we're not getting into the conspiracy stuff that we did, you know, the last time. We basically went like into the Q world of Marvel, you know, with where we thought the show was going to go.
To be fair, they did troll us in WandaVision by the casting of Pietro. So that was a pretty, I thought I enjoyed it, because I thought that was funny. I thought Paul Bettany talking about finally getting to work with a great actor and it was himself, I thought all that was funny. Other people were upset. But yeah, I think it's kind of nice that this one even more so feels like somewhat contained. And I'm excited to see, although Zemo's coming back, which I also think is exciting, which is the kind of, again, continued, like, playing back into the previous Captain America movies.
I've heard that he wears that purple mask that you see in the trailer because of Thanos.
Interesting. Is he trolling them by wearing this mask?
The one thing I do worry is I do assume that he would be somebody that might be a post-split person, because he's already lost his family. You know, what does he care?
That's true. Nothing to lose.
And I mean, not to mention, he was just pretty evil. I seriously doubt that maybe, you know, Black Panther not killing him is let him in his time in jail. But I almost have a feeling that we're just getting into the true villain is when, you know, Bucky and Sam visit him in episode 3. But anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No. I mean, obviously listen to the other IBN podcasts.
And be sure to check out the IB Sports Facebook group this week. We have, or excuse me, this month. We have the March Madness tournament going on. Joe is still alive right now. Are you in the Sweet 16 already? Or is it still around a 30?
I am in the Sweet 16. So yeah, please throw some votes my way. I got. I think I lost in the Final Four last year, so I'm trying to.
Well, I was trying to think. Joe's like
trying to get back to back here.
It's like your fifth or sixth Sweet 16 appearance at least, right?
I don't think it's been happening that long. Okay. Or maybe I just wasn't high enough in the group before.
Yeah, so. That's the only thing. You have to comment a lot.
yeah, a lot. I don't understand how the top like 10 are able to do that much, but good for them. Godspeed.
I do want to plug, especially because, again, me and Joe do the weekly daily fantasy football podcast, which will be back next year, that me and Alan are going to record a backdoor cover podcast tomorrow night. We're going to cover the Valero Open on the PGA Tour, and I will be giving DraftKings plays, which I've been doing very well lately in golf. And unfortunately, we haven't done every tournament. I had surgery. There's other stuff going on. But the 3 weeks that I've given guys for DraftKings, every one of those weeks, I've won money with those picks. So I'm assuming other people would have too.
I'm going to get in on that, especially for the Masters. I got to be ready.
The Master, and that's what I'm going to say. And the Masters 2 weeks away, which is a course that you can easily pick some guys that should do well because course history is so big there. But so definitely, again, IB Sports Podcast Network. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor. Please be sure to subscribe to it. If you could leave a rate and review and share the podcast. But for Keith Fleming and Joe Matz, this is the first edition covering episodes 1 and 2 of the Falcon and Winter Soldier Recap Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. And we will see you guys next week.